Blog Talk Radio.
Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I'm your host, Susan, Laris, and Danz, and today I can think of no more perfect way to launch a new year of programs than with a guest who's going to be talking to us specifically about fear and anxiety. And before I bring him on the show, our guest today is Dr. Friedemann Schaub, and he has a new book called The Fear and Anxiety Solution, A Breakthrough Process for Healing and Empowerment with Your Subconscious Mind. But before I bring him on the show, I wanted to reflect very briefly upon how this show has evolved over time. It's now been over 3 years since I first launched this program, and during the course of all of the wonderful guests who have come onto this program, I think we have all evolved in our relationship to understanding fear. And that's why I believe this guest really has a lot to say to us today. When I first chose the title of this program today, talking about freeing ourselves from fear and anxiety, I later came to kind of second guess it. And in fact, we'll be talking about second guessing today because that's one of the areas that Friedemann talks about. And so I experienced a little bit of anxiety over the title, thinking, well, am I really reflecting the message of the show and of what this guest would like to share with us today? Because what this is about, it's not about getting rid of fear and anxiety. It is changing our relationship to those things. And I believe, as I came to reflect upon it, that freeing oneself is really about no longer being imprisoned by something. And that is a very valuable concept, as is this concept of a frontier beyond fear. I have evolved in my understanding. I used to think that a frontier beyond fear meant totally getting rid of fear. Well, over time, I have realized that fear has its purposes, and yet, again, we don't need to live a life that is imprisoned by that fear, and that we can move into an entirely new domain and even use fear as a catalyst. So with that said, as we launch our new year here, let me tell you a little bit more about our guest today, who is Dr. Friedemann Schaub, and he is calling in from France, I believe, and I am so delighted that he's coming into the show today. Now, Dr. Schaub is both an MD and has a PhD, and he received his medical degree from the University of Munich and pursued a career in cardiology. He then received a doctorate in molecular biology, and he's going to talk to us about this concept of, you know, what do our cells know, which I think is a fascinating area. Dr. Schaub came to observe that we have tremendous self-healing abilities, but that our mind, body, and spirit must be in alignment to fully access that. And he's going to talk to us today about our subconscious minds and how they influence us, the relationship between the subconscious and the conscious. We are going to talk about eliminating the emotional blocks and limitations that prevent us from fully activating our potential to heal, change, and succeed. And Friedemann has helped thousands of people worldwide break through their fear and anxiety, and they are now leading confident and successful, authentic lives. This is a topic that is very near and dear to my heart, which is why I launched this show, because I personally am on a journey too, just like all of you in the audience. I have had a relationship with fear and anxiety my entire life that has evolved over time. So I am just so very delighted to welcome Friedemann Schaub on the program. Welcome, Friedemann. It's so nice to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted. And by the way, my wife, Danielle, gives her best to you because she was on your show also a few weeks ago, I believe.
Yes, and in fact, I was going to mention that. In fact, I was going to let you talk about your yoga retreat at some point, which you talk about in your book. I enjoyed that story. In fact, let's just say that I am so delighted that it was through Danielle Rama Hoffman is her full name, and she was on this show. You're right. She helped close out the season of last year with her enlightening thoughts that she shared with us, and then now we have you on the program. So what a wonderful way to close out last year and then launch the new year. So I'm very, very happy that she helped bring you on the program.
Well, me too. Thank you.
Yes. So I thought that today, perhaps one of the first things we should do, I know within your book, you define fear and anxiety. And I think sometimes we may have preconceived notions as to what those two things are, whether they're separate.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought you provided an interesting definition that relates the two.
Well, you know, I think with fear and anxiety, it's often basically something where some people feel, well, fear is more about the future, something unknown, and anxiety is something more specific. And then I heard also people tell exactly the opposite. But what I noticed in my practice is that this emotion of fear and anxiety is actually labeled by us as individuals, really depending on what we grew up with, what we feel comfortable with, and what we associated with. So there is not really a medical or a psychological dictionary inside of us. It's just really what we associate, this uneasiness, this feeling of the heart is racing, your mind is racing, you're sweating, you just cannot think clearly anymore. All of those things that, you know, we know when we have ever experienced fear and anxiety can be either labeled fear or anxiety, and it's really coming from the same place. It comes from the subconscious. It's not something that we choose. You know, we are not waking up in the morning and say, well, let's see if I can be a little bit anxious about my boss. It's really just something that comes bubbling up from the depths of our mind. And this is why it is so difficult to rationally talk yourself out of fear and anxiety, because it doesn't make rational sense. You know, today a client told me that, you know, one of her fears is that something happens to her kids. So, you know, her kids were, you know, 20 minutes late, and she was starting to wonder what happened. 25 minutes later, she was already thinking, well, there must be something wrong. 30 minutes later, she felt like, you know, okay, now I have to call the hospital. So, you know, it goes really out of control. So 32 minutes later, the kids called and said, you know, we are right outside the house. Why don't you see us? So it's like one of those things where fear and anxiety can distort also our perception on the more rational reality around us. And that's really just what makes fear and anxiety often appear so overwhelming, and we feel so powerless in the midst of it.
You know, as a parent, I actually very much relate to your client because I've been through that too. And you try to rationalize. You do. You try to tell yourself, you know, it's probably fine,
right.
They're delayed or whatever. And you know, there's nothing more visceral, I think, sometimes than how we feel about our children, of course, because we love them so
right.
much. And yet, yes, absolutely, you can be just totally outside of the rational, and you can't come up with a way to rationally calm yourself down in that situation. It can be difficult to do that. And yet, what I find interesting, Friedman, is that we so often look for that. I mean, I have many times where I try to talk myself down. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
using my rational mind. And what
right.
I appreciate about what you're saying is that that's not the key, although we've been taught to do that so much.
Well, it is just, you know, not the key simply because the rational mind and the subconscious mind, from most people, are separate entities. They shouldn't be.
Yes.
But most
yes.
people spend time in their logical thinking and, you know, figuring things out, solving problems, and have very little connection to that subconscious mind, which is always present. But
yes.
when we are not giving the subconscious attention, and also when we are not really knowing how to communicate with the subconscious just continues to do whatever it has been doing for a long time and just basically runs in the background. And this is when people
yes.
that are chronically anxious really feel like that this anxiety is always this undercurrent. You know, it's like this
yes.
white noise of the refrigerator. It's just always there. It's a little bit annoying, and it's just always there, and they don't know what to do with it. Now, you know, the book has this big title, The Fear and Anxiety Solution. Now, there is not one solution. There is no magic wand. I only, you know, have to tell you this, but one of the biggest steps to create a solution, which is, you know, the solution is more a journey, a process, a series of processes that really help you to work through this fear and anxiety. The biggest initial step is to understand that we have the ability to communicate with the subconscious mind. We can learn to speak the language with the subconscious mind. And when you do, then you can actually work and speak with the origin of your emotions and the origin of your fear and anxiety.
Yes, yes, I know you speak a lot of the root causes, which I think are so often masked to us that we don't really look at the root causes. We tend to look
mm-hmm.
at the result of the root causes.
That's totally true. I mean, that's, you know, in medicine, I think that's a very similar problem. And ultimately, that was one of the reasons why I left medicine, because
yes.
we are so trained to treat the symptoms, and we are not
yes.
really looking at what's really underneath the symptom. And, you know, in cardiology, very often people come with the symptoms of high blood pressure, an irregular heartbeat, or, you know, maybe a heart attack. And you give them medication, you treat them, 3 months later they come back, similar symptoms, similar problems. You give them
yes.
more medication, you change your regimen. But nobody really asks what's really going on in your life. You know, what is really happening that stresses you out, that tenses you up, that really gets you out of rhythm. And so I believe we have to see the mind and the body just more as a homogeneous entity that works together, and therefore when there is a symptom on the physical level, we have to ask, okay, is there anything on the emotional, psychological, or spiritual level going on that, you know, may have something to do, maybe the root cause of what's going on the physical level. And with anxiety, that's true too, because unfortunately, we are thinking so much as anxiety as a disorder. There is something wrong with you, so let's have another pill and just numb your emotions out so that you somehow feel better. And, you know, I say in the book that we need to look as, emotions like anxiety, but also depression. We need to look at these emotions like pain, emotional pain. And if you have a physical pain issue, you're not just masking the pain with some kind of, you know, painkillers and are not looking further at where does the pain actually come from. Do you have a broken bone? Do you have maybe like a foreign body in your, you know, in your abdomen? What's going on? That's what we need to do with fear and anxiety too. We need to ask, so where does this fear and anxiety come from? What are actually the roots of the fear and anxiety, so that we are working and overcoming these root causes and not just trying to cover up the symptoms?
You know, I have a personal experience that I think is probably common within the audience where, gosh, it was like 17 years ago now when my son was born, I really fell, it snowballed my fear and anxiety because he wouldn't sleep and required a lot of attention. It was very challenging as a new parent. And that's when I entered this maze of taking medicine to help mask it. And I went through a series, that was it. And then eventually ended up on an antidepressant, which took me a while to get off of because I felt I had this psychological dependency. And I remember a doctor telling me, and this is why I want to bring this up, that, they viewed it like diabetes or something. You may never get over this, even though, you know, it really occurred at that time when, or got worse when my son was born. And in a way, what I felt that did was it made me identify with it, that this is a condition, you know, you will always have. Well, you know, that was what? That must have been 14 years ago, and I haven't taken an antidepressant since, you know. And so I sense that there can be this approach where you're told you are a victim of this, whatever, you know, whether it be depression or anxiety, and then you embrace and internalize that. How do you address that? Because I know this happens a lot. And how can we have a healthy relationship to medications if, you know, during some time we may need those? Can you address that for us, Friedman?
Well, and I think, you know, that's where the pain analogy also works, because when you are in excruciating pain, you know, you need to have some kind of relief. And when you are in constant panic and you just feel so overwhelmed and so confused, it's very difficult to work consciously with your subconscious mind because you're just too restless. You're just too much, you know, in a place of fear to be able to actually understand even what there is for you to do. The voice of the fear is just too loud, and it just takes over. So there is definitely time and space for a medication to give you some kind of reprieve. But that's not the end of the story. And it is shocking to me, you know, when someone like, you know, you were told, well, you may never, ever get rid of it. These are the limiting suggestions that unfortunately are very powerful. When there is a person in a white coat in some degree coming to you and saying that's your disease, then that means that's who you are. And you're right. You feel automatically identified and trapped with it. And that's just, you know, in so many ways wrong, because fear and anxiety is certainly something that doesn't need to be looked at as a disease, and it doesn't need to be looked at as something that you're trapped with. It's a part of your mind. It's a part of your mind that you have to also learn to, you know, understand, listen to, and then also get a sense of what is the message actually trying to tell me. You know, in your case, for example, I don't know your story, but people that are after the birth of a child very anxious and very nervous, you know, in many cases, there is actually their own childhood issues that are coming to the surface. There is something often on a subconscious level triggered by seeing your own child, whether it's a unsafety that you may have felt, whether there is a confusion that was going on at that time. You know, we receive these imprints on how we perceive the world and how we perceive ourselves, usually in the first 12 years of our life. And those formative years of our life are, for lack of a better word, programming our subconscious mind. They are giving us certain survival patterns that are saying, well, this is how you go through life in the best way. And there are survival patterns that are saying, well, you know, you have to be anxious and you have to be always vigilant and on your toes. Only this way you can prevent the shoe from dropping. Or you have to be very small and invisible. Only this way people don't find you and hurt you. You know, so there are these patterns that can basically predispose us to have more anxiety because they have been running, you know, through our lives for most of the times. And when we are then, you know, going to the doctor because of these symptoms and they're saying, well, you have this since 10 years, they don't necessarily look at the patterns. They are only looking at the emotional symptom. And that is where, you know, we as patients have to just take our power back and say, you know, that's your opinion and you're good in, you know, prescribing pills because nobody else can. Thank you very much. But I need to look for other ways that help me then beyond the pill to find a solution.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I will tell you, I find it fascinating. And I know that, you know, during this time of day, there are a number of new mothers who listen to this show. It's amazing how no one talked to me about how I was the youngest in my family, had no nieces or nephews, really, that I was around. I was alone with no family nearby. I mean, I had my husband, but, mm-hmm. you know, no support network, not a lot of support. And I was it was natural. There were probably, you know, I probably could have found resources that would have addressed just you know, how to feel more confident in being a mom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in time, I did become, you know, I learned how to become a good mom, you know, and there you go. You know, I was afraid of not being a good mom. And I know that that can be quite common. And so you're so right how so quickly they don't even, you know, nowadays a lot of times the insurance doesn't even give them the opportunity to talk to you. You know, it's just so quick, mm-hmm. you know, maybe one evaluation and then that's it and you're on some kind of medication. And mm-hmm. and it's really unfortunate. In my own case, spirituality, I mean, that it's a journey for me still, and I know this is true of the audience, is, you know, asking to be shown the way spiritually is what launched everything for me that helped me to start healing. And I know that, mm-hmm. that you know, your work, Friedemann, you know, it's a continuing aspect for everyone listening as to, you know, how can we integrate these concepts into our life. And what you provide in your book, you provide a series of steps, really, that, you know, I know in my own case, I hope to spend some time working with them because they really are very helpful steps in helping us to overcome the emotional blocks, for one. Could you speak to that a little bit, these emotional blocks from the past? How do they impact us?
Well, you know, these are basically part of those, you know, I like to define three major common root causes of fear and anxiety, and these emotional blocks are one of them, or you can call them the emotional baggage or the emotional burden of the past. See, when it's very interesting, you know, people that I'm working with often tell me, you know, I don't really have any issues with the past. You know, there is really, you know, nothing that I think about, or I have talked, you know, 10 years with my therapist about everything. And so then I ask them to go back and, you know, an event in the past that they know had triggered anxiety. And when they really associate themselves with the event, 90% of the time they're actually feeling that their body is changing. They feel tensing up, or their facial expression is changing, or their heart is racing more. And they're completely surprised because they realize, you know, I thought I have really worked through it, but somehow the emotions are still there. It's really a good litmus test for anyone to see, are you really done with your past? Have you found resolution? Or is there still some energy there? Because if you feel it in your body, then you know this is not resolved yet. Even if you intellectually have, you know, forgiven your parents because you say, oh, they're old people now, oh, they did the best they could. But if you go back into your childhood where you were yelled at or maybe mistreated and it still gives you a physical reaction, your subconscious still holds on to it. And there is still a charge to it that is rippling out into your daily life, into your current life. That's one big thing that we need to address, this emotional burden, simply because, you know, imagine that you are, you know, having a container that holds your emotions, and you know, you have already this container half filled from things of your past, and then you're experiencing more anxiety and more fear, but you cannot really express it because it's inappropriate. You cannot run through the office screaming and throwing papers everywhere. You cannot really, you know, yell at people in frustration when they scare you, so you have it to stuff it inside. So this container of your emotions fills up and fills up and fills up until it just overspills. And that's when just the little tiniest thing, like the kids coming late from school home, can throw you into a panic because you're so filled up already with all this emotional baggage that it doesn't take long for you to blow. That's like the pressure cooker. And that's an important aspect to address. And the book gives you a process on how to do this. It's called the pattern resolution process, which just really allows you to work with this container, with your subconscious, and understand the very important concept about why the subconscious mind is holding on to emotions. Because a lot of people wonder, so why do I still, you know, get bothered by my mind about something that happened 50 years ago? Well, the reason is that you have to see that our mind has a very important prime directive, and especially the subconscious is really concerned about you to be safe and ultimately to make it in life. It's a very, very protective part of our mind. Now, in order to be safe, you have to learn. You know, we have to learn to grow, because without growing and learning, without evolving, we're going to die. That's, you know, but that's the force of nature. But the best place to learn from is not the future, because it hasn't happened yet. Even the present moment is not really good to learn from, because not a lot is going on in the present moment that you could learn from. So the library of learnings is really in the past. But what makes us go back in the past? These are not just memories that we don't feel anything about it. What makes us go back in the past and really reconsider, reflect, are our emotions. And when we have emotions of anxiety in the past, we dream about it, we naturally go and, you know, gravitate back to them, we get triggered by things that are similar to them, all with the one idea in mind: go back and learn what you need to learn from it, outgrow these events, and when you do, the emotion's going to pass. And that's exactly what the principle of this process is about.
You know, I find this fascinating, because so often, and I'm sure many others do this too, you'll end up replaying something in our mind. It's like we have these, you know, ruminating is one way I've heard it, where, you know, something has happened in the past, and you replay it and replay it and replay it, and there tends to be this feeling like, I want to break free of this. You know, I want to break free of replaying. And yet what you are saying, Friedman, is that, no, it's not about that we actually have to address it, it sounds. You know, if something is replaying somehow, that means we have something to address. It doesn't mean that we should just get rid of it. And I think there's this tendency to look for the quick, you know, just get rid of it fix, whereas there's something, a core issue here that we need to address.
Well, there's an example, you know, where a client of mine was replaying a very traumatic event of hers. And this this event was when she was, I think, 12 years old. And on that day that she continuously, you know, replayed and was running through her mind, her mother had just tried to commit suicide. And so she was carted off into the hospital. The little girl, you know, watches her mother, you know, strapped down and almost unconscious. The father, completely unemotional, has just a stoic face. The little sister next to her is crying. That's a scenario that is always going through her mind. And that's a scenario that their subconscious said, well, there is something for you to look at. Now, her issue, why she wanted to work with me, was insecurity, anxiety, not feeling good enough, all those kind of things. So when we did this work with the subconscious, went back to this event, and actually looked at this event from a perspective of learning, it's like a higher perspective where you can actually see all these elements of the event without getting emotionally pulled into them. You're kind of more from a neutral point of view, able to see what happened afterwards and how this played out. What happened was that the father went to work, didn't say a word, and the little girl, the client, was basically, you know, left with a decision to make. Do I also go to school as I'm supposed to do and leave my little sister by herself, or do I skip school and take care of my little sister? Without anybody actually telling her what to do, she decided to stay at home and basically take on the role of the mother. And so she took care of the little sister, she cooked, she cleaned the house, and she did this for several weeks without the father doing anything about it. He basically just, because he was emotionally so shut down, it was so overwhelming for him, that all he could do was basically just let her take on the role of the adult and take on, you know, the role of the mother while the mother was gone. Now, when she actually saw this happening, and when she actually could, you know, from this higher learning perspective, reflect on how strong and how courageous and at the same time how selfless and compassionate she already was as a little girl, her heart completely opened up towards herself. She could actually realize, my God, that's really who I am. I'm not the person who I thought I was, you know, a person who never really felt good enough because her husband didn't treat her well, or her colleagues at work were always feeling like, oh, you're just a woman, you don't really know what you're saying. All those other, you know, information that she got from others, all these insults, completely didn't matter anymore because she really could see her essence. And her essence was incredibly powerful, more powerful than what her father was able to do. And that really shifted then just a whole, you know, identity inside of her. And, you know, after a few sessions, her entire anxiety and insecurity issue was gone.
Yes. I wonder how many of us, Friedman, can find instances in our lives where we really did behave in an empowered way, and yet we so often dwell on those times when, you know, we did feel like we were a victim of trauma. I wonder if we kind of paint traumas in the past in a more traumatizing way, whereas maybe if we really reflect upon it, we can see that there were seeds of empowerment, even when we thought we were disempowered. That seems to be my own experience, too, that it's as if we are naturally called to be empowered. And you know, one of the things I wanted you to talk about as well, which is a big topic, but just how even within our own bodies, within ourselves, that there is this concept that there's more to ourselves than we realize, for example, which is a fascinating area.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the idea is very clear, and I think we all have had experiences at times that the body and the mind are not separate. You know, this is not necessarily something that I learned at my time in medical school, but, you know, it's very clear that what we think and what we feel is not just staying in our brain, it's actually involving our entire body. And nowadays there are studies that are saying that actually the nervous system, the intelligence of our, you know, digestive system, our abdomen, is superior to that of our brain. You know, so when we talk about gut feeling and gut reactions, that's actually what they are talking about, that there is something that is outside of the brain that actually has a greater capacity to, compute information than our central nervous system. But what happens is that our these events, these traumatic events, these emotional charged situations of the past are often transferring also into the physical body. And this is when, people that have really not thought about their past, they have blocked it away, they just see it as a big black hole, then all of a sudden through body treatment, an acupuncture appointment, a chiropractic adjustment, have a flashback of an abusive event or an accident or something that they have not thought about forever. This body memory triggered then the memory of the event to come back up. And that is, you know, part of what we can call cellular memory, where there is just this, as I said, transference into the physical form. And there have been, you know, interesting studies about transplant patients, you know, patients that received heart transplants and all of a sudden, you know, disliked strawberries or really wanted to, you know, listen to Mozart or whatever. I mean, like things where they had no idea, why do I have all of a sudden this new dislike or liking? And then they ask the relatives of the donor of the heart, and it turns out that was exactly one of the key, elements of this person that gave them their heart. So, you know, whether this is something we can really scientifically explain or not, it is certainly curious to see how these kind of preferences can be transferred from one person to the next through an organ.
Yeah, I find those stories fascinating. You know, as you were speaking, I was thinking about how things in the present can also really occupy our attention. Now, I'm going to use an example of someone I knew who had cancer, and this is a very challenging diagnosis. And this person told me that she could not go more than a couple minutes without thinking about having cancer. You know, no matter how much she tried to go on about her business or whatever. It just kept coming back. You know, I have cancer. And this is something in the present that she was experiencing. And so this, it was just constantly coming back and as if something that you just couldn't escape. And so I wonder if you could speak to that, because I know that when we're going through something, in fact, like say we're having financial difficulty, same thing can happen sometimes where, you know, you're doing stuff and you can't seem to get beyond, oh, I've got to pay you know, these bills or whatever. How do we move beyond these things in the present that can be rather, you know, serious things that are burdening us? How can we live in a more empowered way and not feel like we're victims of our repeating thoughts about these things?
Right, right. Well, you know, when you think about cancer, I think in this regard, just to specifically address this for a moment, everybody knows that, you know, cancer is really horrible. It's going to kill you. It's something really, really serious. And, you know, that's what we have been told, and that's what we definitely believe. What we also are indirectly made believe is that the cancer is your enemy that is attacking you, and it's almost like a foreign body that's in your body, and you just feel like, why do I have to play host for this thing? Now, it is actually something, again, that you have created. You know, this is a part of your body. It's still connected to all the other cells in your body. It's still a part of, you know, the intelligence within you. And I think we have to change also how we are seeing cancer just as, you know, the enemy that we have to battle with anything that we can, even if it would potentially cause our own life, just to overcome this thing, to, again, also understanding more how can we actually use the intelligence of our body to support the healing process? How can we understand what actually is the root cause of the cancer? And it's a whole different story, and we can have a whole show on that. But I have so many clients I worked with that could pinpoint down where the original thought form of the cancer came from. You know, what was actually happening? An inner conflict that they couldn't really wrap their mind around. Something that they have been really feeling burdened by, and they couldn't find a resolution. These things can suppress our immune system and make our body express something like cancer, whether it is just an expression of this, what we couldn't resolve, or whether it's actually the body trying to make you pay attention to something that you try to either ignore or, you know, maybe not think about. We don't know, but it's definitely a part of this belief that our body and our mind are actually a holistic system, and that disease is not just, you know, a malfunction of the body, but that disease is a part of this holistic system, that it has something to do with us simply being out of balance. And what the cancer is telling you is you need to get back in balance. And if you know someone who had cancer and was healing from cancer, it is often a life-changing event. Often people tell you, you know, I really became a much more balanced or calm or wiser person because of it. So there are many people that take this as the opportunity to further evolve, and they don't see themselves just as a survivor. They actually see that through this, what happened to them, they are thriving. And this is where I think we have to deal with any kind of challenging situation with a greater sense of confidence. We cannot control every detail of our lives. We cannot control necessarily our employment, the stock market, or any, you know, things that we were worrying about. But what we can learn is to really gain a greater insight and awareness of our capabilities and of our potential. And this way create a stronger foundation of trust in ourselves. And if you feel inclined so, which I think is a wonderful thing for us to do, also to expand in trust in God, the universe, or something, you know, of a spiritual foundation, so that you really can approach life more with the sense that I know I can handle and grow through anything that comes my way. That gives you a whole different sense of freedom, because then you're not just saying life needs to be in this little square comfort zone, and if anything is not really there, I'm freaking out. you're actually just approaching life, which I believe what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be a journey where we are ultimately needing to find out more about who we are and hopefully learning more about what we can also share with the rest of the world.
Yes. Yes. I so appreciate that perspective. And, you know, I feel like, my own story and so many other stories I've heard where it was through some kind of hardship that we were opened up to spirituality. That's what led us to see spirituality. I had personally shut down myself until I had some hardships which were a catalyst. Mm. And I wouldn't be doing this radio show or doing any of this if not for encountering hardships that then opened the door to a spiritual life. And, you know, that's a continuing journey for me, and I'm sure for everyone. And it just seems to be it is a healthier perspective to, you begin to see these things, you know, they really are gifts in a way, even though they sure didn't seem that way at the time. they don't often, but it helps now, too. Doesn't it help in the now, Freedom, and when we have some kind of hardship and we think, okay, what are the gifts of this? You know, how is this going to open me up? How is this? You use that term comfort zone in your book a few times. You know, how does this? What about these things that push us outside our comfort zone, and what can they do for us?
Well, and that's where fear and anxiety is such a powerful catalyst for growth. You know, it is something that can absolutely appear like a tormenting hardship. It can appear like an overwhelming force, and it is certainly something that can make us feel trapped and stuck.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it is also something that can be this catalyst, this inner compass that is guiding us actually to face ourselves and discover who we are. You know, I always tell clients, this is not about getting rid of fear and anxiety. This is about actually learning to embrace and appreciate who you are. Because once you do, you will discover that this fear and anxiety completely disappears. This is kind of the gist of it. If you really want to understand the message of fear and anxiety, 99% of the times, it is simply the message that you have somehow focused so much outside of yourself that you lost touch with yourself, with your center, whether you have been worrying about something outside of you that was not in your control, whether you have given your power away to someone that you feel that person's opinion is more important than mine, whether you have neglected yourself completely because you thought, I need to give it all to my job and my career, and I don't even want to eat lunch or dinner because that's what I need to do. These are the moments where people are triggering fear and anxiety because they're losing themselves with something that is not themselves. And fear and anxiety just basically tells you, hey, it's time to focus back on yourself. It's time to face yourself. And that's where fear and anxiety is really, I believe, a very, very dear friend, because it doesn't let you down. It doesn't let you get lost in the maze of life.
Yes, yes. You know, that I feel like it's such a journey to begin to understand that these things really are gifts. And, you know, as I said at the beginning of this program, I have an evolving relationship to this show, because I think it is our natural inclination to just get rid of it. And you know, I'm always wanting to even adjust my show description a little bit, because I have so evolved in beginning to understand this. And I feel that your work has tremendous depth here. I mean, this is a really powerful piece of work that you are providing for us to help us to work through this. And it's very approachable, too. I might tell the audience that this book is extremely approachable. You can step right into the techniques that you provide, and it takes you on a journey And it's not complicated, really. It's something that
it's
really quite easy to step into. Now, what about phobias?
It is something, though, that
I just wanted
to quickly mention,
please.
You know, when you go through the intention for this book was for me to really provide for a much greater audience than I as an individual person can do, real support and real tools to get a handle on their fear and anxiety and to really transform it into these catalysts of growth. And so it is something that you don't want to just read, you know, on the way to work or in the bus or, you know, just run through in a matter of days, because it is really a journey that is changing you. Every chapter has the potential for you to really grow beyond the person that you were when you started to read it. And after you go through these chapters, you will always find some homework and some tools that you want to first practice with. You know, there is a chapter on mind racing, how to actually really diminish your negative self-talk by 80-90% in a matter of 2 weeks. But you have to work for 2 weeks on that process so that you really have ingrained it, that you are creating new pathways inside of you, that you automatically go into this more open and possibility thinking than going into this negative spiral. And so then when you are there, you can go to the next step and work on integrating the parts of you that are conflicting with each other. You know, often there is a part of us that feels actually really adult and positive and capable and ambitious, and then there is a part of us that feels like the naysayer, the inner critic, the part that is always scared and always holding us back, the saboteur, whatever we want to call it. And so we feel in this constant tug of war. And that constant inner struggle can create anxiety, of course. There is a wonderful process described on how to resolve it, and you can actually resolve it in one setting. But then you want to further integrate this resolution. You want to continue to work with the subconscious part for a while to really, really understand that these parts actually can harmonize and work together. So what I'm trying to say is take your time with this book. Really work through it. I know there are thousands of books out there on fear and anxiety, and there are thousands of ways that lead to Rome. But if you really take this path, I promise you, you will see fear and anxiety, and you will see yourself in a completely different light.
Yes, yes, yes. I am. As I was prepping for this show, I realized that you know, these techniques, I mean, they're very available, but the information in your book is so accessible. And yet, yes, sometimes a book will come across my path where you just think, I need to spend time in this. And that is really important for people to recognize, that you're letting people know that you know, these things are not necessarily instantaneous. You know, we're all looking for the instantaneous cure. But that's not the point, and that you know, it really is something to spend time with, and I personally intend to do that myself because I feel there are some very powerful things here. And you know, as much as I was going to ask even more questions, and I realized that we're quickly running out of time because this is just such a powerful topic. I think we could literally talk for hours on this because there's just it's a very deep, life-changing topic that has many aspects.
Yeah.
And so I want to remind people that your website is up on the show page if you're accessing the show in that way. People access the show in different ways. And if they're not, that your website is called the Fear and Anxiety Solution.com. And and that I really encourage people to go to your website. You are a very active blogger, which I appreciate, and you know, you have a social media presence as well. And I encourage people to follow your work along with me, because I am so very grateful that your wife, Danielle, was on the show, providing a gateway to you. And thank you so much for being here, Friedman. I'm in a real space of gratitude for all that you're doing.
Well, you know, it's also mutual, this gratitude, because Danielle and I were talking about you and really admire that you are so this bridge between, you know, your audience and the people that are trying to help others to overcome fear and anxiety or find their spirituality, and that we have a voice is partially, you know, the doing of people like you. And so thank you for just being so committed and so passionate about sharing that, what we have to offer. And so I want to really thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, the intent behind this show from the very beginning, and it's still true, I'm just a regular person exploring these things. You know, I didn't come from some elaborate New Age background or anything. You know, I came from evangelical Christianity, you know, totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I found many gifts in that, you know, when you start to really look.
Right.
You begin to find the underlying gifts in there, too. And so
yeah.
I just feel so often, many of us, and I'd like to encourage other people who feel like they might like to start a show or something. You don't have to have all the answers. In fact, it's even better if you don't. It's wonderful to explore the answers and explore different approaches, you know, together. We're all on this journey together. And even the teachers, you know, your book is filled with beautiful personal examples. And I so appreciate the teachers who share, you know, their own experiences in very authentic, honest ways. We're all on a journey, whether we're teaching or exploring, we're all exploring. So thank you for bringing your authentic self to your work. And I really do appreciate that. And it's a true joy to know you. So thanks again for being
thank
here.
You. And if you ever want to continue to go into the depths of fear and anxiety, I'm very happy to further talk with you.
Well, I would very much welcome that, because I think that, you know, again, there is a great deal to explore here. And I would certainly welcome you back if I would be delighted. So
anytime. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you again, Friedman. And I guess you're calling from France, so it's rather late there. But I hope you have a wonderful evening. And
thank you.
Again, I look forward to next time. And do send my love and blessings to your wife as well, because she is a true inspiration as well. So thank you so much.
She is. I am very blessed with having her in my life, for sure.
Yes.
So thank
yes.
you very much, and have a wonderful weekend as well, and a happy, healthy, and fulfilling new year.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. Show note, as we wrap up today's program, this is a double feature weekend. We are launching the show with two episodes in a row. Tomorrow night, we're going to have a fun night of readings with Debbie Griggs is returning. This is Saturday, January 11th at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. Debbie, who's been on the show a few times, very popular guest, she is a photo psychic. She uses this work in many ways. She has assisted investigators with cold cases using her talents, but she is also able to assist you by examining a photo and providing information on your relationships, your health, answer any number of questions. So join us tomorrow night, Saturday, January 11th, at 7 p.m. Pacific, and do check out frontierbeyondfear.com for specific instructions as to how you can get a photo to Debbie either before the show or during the show. Before would be best if you're going to do a reading, because and she's very popular. I would suggest you call in early. The call-in number for the show is 310-807-5104. And I welcome you to tomorrow night's show. So thank you, everyone, for being here today. I welcome both the live audience and those of you in the podcast, because I always am very aware, as I will launch the year once again, recognizing I am always so very aware of the energy of the podcast listeners across time. And consider this a very present welcome to you in awareness of your presence in this moment with me. There are no barriers of time. You have been with us today, very much present. And I am in a space of gratitude for the wonderful audience and the guests who have come to this show. And we do have a wonderful new year planned. There is an event coming up. In fact, I suppose I should mention that and then I'll wrap up. I am going to be speaking in Los Angeles in just about a month. I'm going to be at the Los Angeles Conscious Life Expo, and a number of the guests to the show are actually going to be at the expo as well. And that's taking place at the Los Angeles Airport Hilton, and I'm going to be speaking on Sunday, February 9th at 6 p.m. about heaven on earth. And you will find other guests speaking throughout this event. And so if you happen to be in that area or considering traveling to LA for this event, please do come by my booth. I will be doing a live broadcast from the booth the evening of Friday, February 7th. And I would just be so delighted to welcome you and talk with you personally at my booth. So just wanted to let you know about that, to mark your calendar. So, again, thank you so much for being here today. And let me echo Friedemann's comments at the end and wish you just the most wonderful of New Year's. Let us launch this new year knowing that our journeys are evolving and expanding in the most exciting of ways. I think that we can all embrace the potential of this new year. And, you know, whatever comes our way this year is a gift. And the more that we can see that, the more we can be in a space of gratitude and growth, the more empowered we can be over our lives in the coming year. I know that together we can co-create quite the wonderful future, and that starts in the present moment. So wishing you all peace today. Thank you so much for being here. ¶¶